Come to order for it's House File 934. What is it? 934? What's the number?
934 and 1030.
934 and Senate File 1030. Welcome to everybody. I'm sorry for the runaround that you've been given, but we had the House rescheduled us into three different rooms in less than an hour before the committee was to start, and that kind of was the tipping point for me, and so we are here in the Capitol, and welcome. We needed to have a room that would handle the technology, and I think this hopefully will be adequate. Today, as we had an issue that was unique in the House bill that was presented last week, our approach to literacy and reading proficiently by third grade was a key focus in our bill, and so we're focusing on that today so that you'll have an understanding of not only what it is, but why it is there. And so we're going to begin with our staff reviewing the provisions that are in the bill that relate to our literacy incentive revenue and supporting efforts. Dr. McQuaid?
Madam Chair and members, the presentation in front of you and on the screen will just quickly review some of the previous literacy initiatives and then go through what the literacy incentive aid offers in the Senate bill. What happened in the 2009 legislature was the creation or the expansion of the definition of comprehensive scientifically based reading instruction, and the definition in statute was expanded to include the five components of literacy, which included fluency, phonemic awareness, phonics, reading comprehension, and vocabulary development. Along with that, there was a requirement of the higher eds to include those five strands in their reading preparation of their teacher candidates. And then the teacher license for initial licensure, a component was included that required candidates to have a knowledge and skill in their ability in comprehensive scientifically based reading instruction. Also that year, the Minnesota Reading Corps was codified in statute, and it was aimed to help train Head Start program providers and other pre-K program providers, school staff, to evaluate and teach early literacy skills to children age 3 to grade 3. That year also, the Board of Teaching was required to administer that assessment of reading instruction in the examination for an initial licensure. And Ms. Yanker will go through that.
And Madam Chair and members, on the next slide, if part of the Senate bill has a reading instruction stipend, which allows a teacher who has already gotten their initial license before February 1st, 2012, to earn up to $1,000 if they go back and take this reading assessment that was part of the initial licensure. And the reading assessment is one of three subtests that are available. And then just on the slide, you can see is the content of what they need to understand for the content for that assessment.
And then, Madam Chair, also in the Senate bill is literacy incentive aid. And the aid would begin in fiscal year 2013, and it includes both a proficiency component and a growth component. And just very quickly, the proficiency component is $150 times the three-year average percent of students exceeding proficiency on the reading portion of the third grade MCA2 times the enrollment at that school. The growth component is also $150 times the average three-year average percent of fourth graders making medium or high growth, multiplied by the school's enrollment. And those calculations are performed at the building level and then rolled up to the district level, and that revenue is distributed to the districts that way. And then just real quick, I'll point to the box that's on the MDE website, and this is actually representative of fourth grade reading, but you can break this down by subgroup, and you can see this for every school. And it just shows broken down by proficiency and not proficiency, the three categories of growth, low, medium, and high. And then on the next slide, just the definition straight from statute of what the growth is, low, medium, and high. That's all referenced in statute. And the both are all the low growth, medium growth, and high growth is benchmarked to the state growth target. And again, the Senate formula is partly based on growth and partly based on proficiency. Again, averaged across 3 years, and $300 is allocated the whole formula. And what the Senate decided to do was split that equally between growth and proficiency. So first, just a breakdown of the growth component. There's, if we, for example, there's 100% of the fourth graders making medium or high growth, the allowance for that school is $150. If 50% of the fourth graders at that site are making medium or high growth, the allowance for that school is $75. So then that allowance is multiplied by the enrollment at the school. And so different schools will have a different growth, even if they are within, or a different allowance, even if they are within the same district. And then as the percent of fourth graders making medium or high growth changes, the allowance will change or increase, and it will increase as well. Then the proficiency component is calculated in much the same way. And the allowance, again, is $150. And so if 100% of the kids are meeting proficiency, the allowance for that school is $150. And again, if there are 50% of the kids making proficiency, then the allowance is $75, and that, again, is multiplied by the enrollment at each site. And again, as the percent of third graders increases, the percent of third graders at the site making proficiency increases, the school will generate more aid. So then again, the literacy incentive revenue is a combination of that that growth calculation and the proficiency calculation. And the revenue is not capped, and it may be used at the discretion of the district, so there's no constraints on the use. The governor also in his proposal had a governor's award for excellence in education. And just to point out the differences between the two, the governor's award only looks at those schools where at least 40% of the kids are making high growth. And for that, the revenue, the way the revenue is generated there is that it takes $30 times the number of kids in the enrolled in the school. And then for the difference above 40%, there's a calculation that for that too, it's $160 multiplied by that difference. So for example, if the percent of schools making high growth is 42, or percent of the kids at the school making high growth is 42%, the revenue is $30 plus 160 times that 2%, so 42 minus 40, and then multiplied by the enrollment. There are some limitations on this revenue. 50% may be used to maintain high performance of the school, but at least 50% must be used to disseminate best practices to other schools. So just the difference between the two is the governor only looks at high growth and very high growth, in that it, more than 40% of the kids have to be making high growth. And the governor also does not recognize proficiency in his calculations. And there's also a run that should be in front of you, and Mr. Nauman will step through that.
So, Madam Chair and members, I'm looking at the landscaped legal size document in color. It looks like this, and I'll walk you quickly through the comparisons that are made here. With a quick caveat, we're looking at fiscal year 2012, and the Senate bill does not actually begin providing money until fiscal 13. The reason for that we modeled out fiscal 12 is so that we could make a comparison to the governor's formula so that you can see differences. So what we have here in columns across the top are the columns. First, we have the pupil counts for fiscal year 12, and then under the columns lettered A, B, C, D up through M, columns A, B, C, and D are the Senate formula. And members will see that there's initially, in purple off to the left, an original formula allowance of $300, and then it's split 50-50 between column A, which is the proficiency calculation, and column B, which is the growth calculation that Dr. McQuay spoke of, to give us the initial literacy revenue. So In fiscal year 12, the entitlement for the formula is $85.2 million, or about on average $103 per adjusted average daily membership student. Then the next calculation, because we thought it's interesting to note what happens if you put all the money on the proficiency side versus all the money on the growth side, and you do get changes based on that. The Senate chose, as Dr. McQuay spoke of, doing this on a 50-50 basis. But the hypothetical example number one puts $295 on the proficiency calculation, and again spends the exact same amount, $85.2 million. And then in column G, we flip it, spend 100% of the money. In this case, the allowance is $305 on the growth side. Again, $85.2 million. But an example, you can see the Aiken School District under the hypothetical one under proficiency gets $158,000, and under hypothetical two, $146,000. Now, moving on to hypothetical three, this is essentially the governor's formula, but not the governor's level of money. So what was done was the governor's proposal was initially was $7 million, and what we did was we expanded it to the $85 million level so that we could have an apples-to-apples comparison. And what you see, because of the formula that Dr. McQuay spoke of, that there's that 40% threshold before money is ever generated, there are some sites that don't generate money at all. And in that case, you end up with zeros. And in other cases, when you expand the money to $85.2 million, you generate substantial, large amounts of money. Then what we have in columns K, L, and M is a subtraction of the literacy incentive aid in the Senate bill, again, for fiscal 12, compared to the governor's hypothetical example. And then column L is the 100% proficiency calculation compared to the governor. And these are on a per-pupil basis. And then the 100% growth calculation is column M. And we have all the districts and charter schools on this one.
Okay, thank you very much. I don't know if there are questions, but we may hold them so that we can hear the presentation, give you a little bit more both historical context and the motivation for moving the way we did in the legislature, and particularly in the Senate over the last few years. And for that, I'd like to call on Susan Thompson, who's representing the moms, referred to as Moms on a Mission, that kind of started this all. So, Senator Bonhoff and myself, along with Representative Benson and then Representative Burns, attended a meeting after the 2006 elections at the Ridgedale Library, and had a very good education and demonstration of the challenges facing struggling readers and what can in fact be done to meet those needs. And that kind of began it all when we made a commitment to see if we could get to the bottom. We didn't know just exactly where it was going, but I think Susan Thompson, who is been a very strong advocate and researcher on the subject, will kind of walk us through a bit of this for you.
Great. And for advancing the slides, is there a clicker, or do I just use the computer?
Up and down arrow, I think.
That works. Yeah, it does. Good. Yeah. Thanks very much for inviting us to the committee. There was a large group of us that worked on this initiative, and it was a really strong bipartisan effort at both the House and the Senate, and really want to emphasize there's a very large group, and I'm just a small voice among many people that care very much about what you care about, education. And our emphasis was placed on a specific syllable. Our emphasis was placed on the critical importance of reading by third grade. And we all come from a reference point where we've lived in experience, where we've had children that have struggled mightily. And we've been very successful in helping our own, and now we're reaching out. But I'm going to have Bette Erickson kind of kick it off, and I'll offer some comments midway through the presentation. Thank you.
I think I've got it figured out. My name is Bette Erickson, and I'm a parent of a 21-year-old college student who was a non-reader in second grade. And I am also a teacher, and I graduated with an undergraduate degree in pre-K and elementary education, and I found myself unable to teach my own child how to read. And in my eyes and in our family, that became a critical time in our family where we had to take some action. And those of you who are we had the pleasure of working with on the 2009 legislation, I appreciate the opportunity to be back. And those of you who are new know that I believe that all children have the right to read, and I believe it's up to the adults to see that it happens. And there are enough adults in this room that care about this issue and all those that back us up so that we can make this happen and make this a reality for our students in Minnesota. So thank you very, very much for your time today. As Senator Olson mentioned, we formally joined together in 2006 at the Ridgedale Library. But before that, we were finding each other, the parents and the moms, at conferences and, you know, informational sessions and in school meetings, and often with tears and frustration, all trying to find what's this secret bullet for that we need to help our otherwise bright, capable children learn this critical skill in life. And there they are. Beautiful. And, of course, in the state of Minnesota, unfortunately, we have tens of thousands of more students who are non-readers in second grade, first grade, second grade, third grade, and unfortunately being passed on, as you know, we have the retention bill is trying to address. So we're really here on behalf of those students and their families. Our children had the benefit of learning to read for the most part from private tutors, and I actually went on and received training myself, and I have a private practice now where I work with students who are identified as having learning disabilities. The message I want to deliver is that all children can learn to read. Children with learning disabilities are often, they have average or above average intelligence, they have competencies and skills and gifts in all other areas, and they have a glitch, if you will, in processing the written language. But they can learn to read, and they're a valuable resource to our community and to our state and to our families, and they have the right to reach their potential. So I encourage all of us to pay attention to this group of students, as well as all the others that fall into the tens of thousands who are not at competency by grade 3. These are the NAEP scores, of course, which I've seen these NAEP scores, and I'm sure all of you on the committee have looked at these NAEP scores, and I'm still going to spend a couple of seconds here on the NAEP scores because I think it is inconscionable that we have 30% of our students. I'm working in some schools. We've got 30 kids in the classroom. We've got 10 kids who are not reading at grade level. We've got 10 kids who are targeted to not graduate from high school in each of our classrooms, at least in the city of Minneapolis, where I'm doing a lot of my work. And I think I just think it's critical. And again, I thank you for your time and attention on this issue. Here's the community meeting that we had that little did we know what trouble we were going to cause. And then we'll explain it in a little more detail. But we did feel it was most important and most effective to have the legislature make a policy statement, attend to this issue, and then also work very closely with the agency, in this case the Board of Teaching, Department of Education, so that we're all on track and working together in partnership to help our students succeed. Thank you. If any of you are interested in the hours of if you haven't had enough testimony. No, but this is historic testimony that's online, and it's easily accessed through these links if you're interested in the testimony from the past.
Oh, the audio. How do we get the audio off?
You could put the mic down by the put it right down by the computer.
try it again.
Wherever the speaker is. And
for me, when I was growing up, really hard. It took me 2 years to learn the alphabet.
And my second child was in kindergarten. She could not learn the alphabet. And when they started turning to the exercise of learning to read, she hit an absolute brick wall.
And my son was the one who wasn't getting it the way it was being taught. It was being taught very creatively, very enriched. They would read wonderful stories. But if you don't know that sounds make letters make sounds, none of that really helps you learn to read.
And he would read, or try to read each one as if it were a completely new concept. He would never recognize that he just said cat and that Matt had something to do with cat, the sound. He just couldn't recognize those patterns.
I was reading in fourth grade level, and although I continued to improve, this was kind of the cutoff. This was like, you know, they switched away from helping me improve myself and more to just kind of surviving in the mainstream.
We had a para from the school help him until she came to me in third grade and said, Cindy, I can't teach him. I don't know how to help him. I'm doing everything I can. All the training the school has given me, I can't help him. What a wake-up call.
I said, well, what do I do? And they said, well, the best thing he has going for him is a mother that cares. And I was stunned. I had no answers of why he can't read, how he will learn to read, what I should do to help him to read, other than I knew it was very, very important on his self-esteem.
I felt like a lot of my teachers didn't think I was smart, even the reading specialist at school. She told me once in front of the other kids, Emmy, you just need to pick up the pace.
Hi. That was my daughter, by the way. And that story I'm going to tell you again here in my little prepared statement. I'm sorry, I get a little bit nervous, but then I think I have a beautiful daughter like that that can sit in a room full of 35 strangers, very official strangers, by the way, and she can get through it. And she's dyslexic, so I think I can too.
Give your name for the record, if you will.
You bet. My name is Carrie Thompson, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here today and speak to you all. I am the single mom to three beautiful treasures from China, and I'm an advocate for effective reading instruction. My oldest daughter, Emmy, has dyslexia. Struggling to read since kindergarten, she was not diagnosed until the spring of second grade when I took her for an evaluation outside of our local school district. The reading specialist at our elementary school told me that Emmy's struggles were most likely attention-related because she simply couldn't keep her eyes on the page. The worst reader in her reading pullout, Emmy just mentioned here, and you heard her say, that she was once asked to pick up the pace. That night in tears, she said to me, how can I pick up the pace? I don't know a word on the page. Emmy was convinced she was just dumber than all the other kids. And those are her exact words. In fact, she had a very high IQ, but she was dyslexic, reading far below grade level, and by that point, it had already had a dramatic impact on her self-esteem. I was a mom on a mission. For months after her diagnosis, I researched everything I could to find anything on effective instruction for struggling readers, and I came across two important findings: the five components identified by the National Reading Panel's report on effective reading instruction, including direct instruction on phonemic awareness, phonics fluency, vocabulary and comprehension, and the groundbreaking research neurological research of Dr. Sally Shaywitz regarding the efficacy of research-based reading instruction that relies upon the very same five components. Both discoveries changed the course of Emmy's life, and I would argue my own. After a frustrating battle to secure an individualized education plan with our local school district, we finally received the promise of services. But we failed to get Emmy the research-based reading instruction, the direct instruction that she needed. That fall, I enrolled her at Groves Academy, a private placement at our own expense, and it came at quite a cost. I had no choice. The stakes were too high. Research showed that after third grade, it would take four times longer to get her to read at grade level, if ever. At Groves, Emmy found immediate success, and maybe more importantly, she found a sense of self-worth as she quickly began to learn to read. In fact, standardized tests showed that Emmy gained three full academic years in her first year at Groves Academy. She went in at a mid-first grade level, and after her first year, she was reading at 4.2 grade level. After 3 years, Emmy acquired a solid foundation of skills that would allow her to be successful back in a public school setting. She was open enrolled at Orono, where today she is a highly successful high school freshman. She is an exceptional student who works hard and still tutors every week. She swam varsity for the first time this fall and was named Rookie of the Year and All-Conference. I'm a little proud here, and ended her first semester with a very respectable 3.52 grade point average. Just before high school, she took the ACT Explore test and scored in the 96th percentile nationwide for science and the 88th percentile for reading nationwide. Emmy is one of the lucky ones. She plans to become a veterinarian. However, there are far too many Minnesota kids just like Emmy who struggle to read every day and as a result struggle to find their own self-worth. I've witnessed effective reading instruction taught by teachers that understand the five components and varied methodologies of effective research-based instruction firsthand. The evidence is clear. We know what works. With the right instructions, all kids can learn to read and to read well. Today, I'm a mom on a mission. I am one of a legion of passionate grassroots advocates, informed individuals who have teamed up with researchers and academics, educators and legislators, some of whom are in this very room, and I'm very honored to have worked beside them, who are fighting to eliminate Minnesota's achievement gap. I am here today not for Emmy, but for all Minnesota children who struggle to read at grade level by third grade, and who may never reach their full potential without well-trained teachers and effective reading instruction. And I thank you again for your time.
Thank you, Carrie.
And I think that's a really important point we want to send home, is we're here not for our kids. I mean, I was off in my career being an investment banker and loving it, and two of my three kids hit a brick wall and were struggling with reading, could not learn to read. And I had to just step off that track, which I was very happy to have been on, and enter into a now has become a lifelong passion of learning the research, getting trained as a reading tutor, going into the public schools and working with kids that need our help. Because you know what? They can read proficiently. And it launched me, along with many people, into a passionate engagement with all of you. I had never been to the Capitol. Thank you. I didn't even know how to get here. But we came over in December 2006, and we came to learn. And thank you. I see many faces here that have really dug in and worked with us. We came here because we wanted all children in Minnesota to learn to read. And we spent 4 years, I'm going to go through about four slides quickly, summarize what we did. And it wasn't for our kids. My kids, I mean, I hired private tutors. I learned everything I could. My daughter graduated summa cum laude. My son was first in his class in ninth grade at Orono. And let me tell you, he repeated kindergarten because he couldn't learn the alphabet. He was in special ed as a young kid. I mean, he struggled. But there really is a solution out there. We can make this happen. Now, here's the context. The next slides are on the context, and it's really setting the stage as to why the literacy provisions that are before you today make eminently good sense. What I'm going to tell you about is we dug in and tried to set the stage to help professional development for initial licensure. Only initial licensure. So the new literacy provisions really relate to all of the very hard working teachers that have been licensed in the past. Okay, so as Bette mentioned, we really decided to work on a dual path. We had the privilege of working with the legislature on trying to put forth a piece of legislation, which your staff described earlier today. And then we felt, you know, have this strong legislative statement from our legislature and companion it with some change in rule so that the legislative intent, when it hit the road, would really have traction and there'd be implementation and change. So I had served on the Board of Teaching Reading Task Force for 2 years. It was a very combative, difficult process. To say it was stressful would be an understatement, but everyone on the committee would say that. I wasn't alone. And we were comprised mainly of higher ed professors, very, very educated people, about reading research. We had different philosophies. We worked hard for a year and a half, and we made some change. So what kept me driven, passionate throughout this process are two facts that you see on the slide. We are working on the task force and digging in to try to understand the reality. Why do we have so many kids that aren't reading well? And I thought, well, what better way to do it than to go plant myself over at the Board of Teaching in one of the cubicles and take out every required reading syllabi at every teacher preparation program and study them. You know, take a look. Is there coherence across institutions? Is there depth of knowledge being delivered? Is there a practicum where they can really dig in and apply what they're learning? And what I found after many, many weeks is I learned a lot. I had a lot to learn, and I was appalled. What I was appalled about is we did not have coherence across the syllabi of what was required. And to summarize it, because I could go on for days about what I read about, but to summarize it, if you looked at the required reading courses for the syllabi, now this is just for the undergraduate candidates, 120 credits is typically what's required. What you would see is that less than 5% of the required credits had anything to do with the topic of reading instruction. So as a public school parent, I came away from that exercise and I concluded we don't have depth of knowledge. We're not delivering depth of knowledge to our lovely new teacher candidates. How can they possibly teach with a reference point that's meaningful? And we didn't have a required experience for that depth of knowledge to be applied with students. And then I thought, well, how could that be? They take a licensure test. Certainly the licensure test would help drive the depth of curriculum in higher ed. So I studied the licensure tests. And if you go, we have a different vendor now, but back then when we were doing this research, it was ETS Praxis 00114 test for elementary ed teachers. I went and read the test. And believe me, 120 questions, 10 questions. On the topic of reading instruction. But the thing that blew my mind is there's composite global scoring on the test. You could all get the 10 questions wrong, pass the test, get a license. So I'm thinking to myself, we don't have depth of knowledge in the syllabi at our teacher ed preparation programs. We don't even have an accountability tool that reveals the problem. And that was what kept me passionate through the process. And so we dug in and we worked hard, and the legislation that we worked on that you all approved now after 3 years, you know, it got approved. And then companion to that, we've got new rules approved at the Board of Teaching. And there's really some change happening. Thank you so much for the new legislation. Because what happened is the legislation said, yes, we are going to require depth of knowledge. And yes, we are going to require that the Board of Teaching, which they were tremendously cooperative and supportive to the process, they're going to shoulder up with the policymakers, and they're going to require that the licensure test evaluate the depth of knowledge. And the new we got a new test vendor that could develop the test so that aligned to the new rules. And the test started in 2010. And I'm sure you'll be getting impact data probably before your session is out. But this is very, very important. Feel great about the law you passed. It was really, you know, very meaningful. Starting in 2012, there will be a higher cut score on the some of these initial licensure tests that include the content area of reading because of the law. This is very critical. But all of this sets the stage, and Marcy's going to give a comment as to how this has also helped in another area. But my send-home message is this. We worked hard. We accomplished something significant with all of you policymakers and the hard work of the Board of Teaching. It only relates to initial licensure. We must take the next step forward and support our hardworking teachers with some of the new literacy provisions. So I'll turn it to Marcy.
Hi, I'm Marcy Pullman. I'm, once again, a parent of a student in the public schools who was in the public schools, who has graduated with a four-year degree from one of our state universities. I'm also an advocate for families with kids with learning disabilities and other disabilities. I'm a former special educator and a retired CPA. I wanted to add to Susan's story here that recently the Board of Teaching has been revising the licensure rules for teachers of special education, as well as the process that has been completed for regular education. The Board of Teaching process for revising special education teacher licensure is not completed. They have proposed revisions. And because the legislation that we're talking about clearly communicated that it applied to all teachers, regular and special education as well, those standards for the depth of knowledge on the five strands of reading and scientific research-based instruction have been also incorporated into the proposal for the special ed licensure rules. Which is very important. Listening to some of the stories that we've heard here, you can see how it's extremely critical that special education teachers and regular education teachers are on the same page, have the same body of knowledge. If we're going to address struggling readers and target instruction to what they need, we need to know what has been done in the past that hasn't worked before we know what to do next as a student who is qualified for special education. If we want to move away from qualifying children for special education under the IQ achievement discrepancy, if we want to move away from that to identifying kids who need more intensive instruction because they haven't made the progress we expected them to make under general instruction, all teachers need to be on the same page. And as Susan said, we've addressed in the legislation, in the rules, new teacher licensure candidates. What we haven't addressed and we're not able to address was practice development. And that's where we feel these incentives to be so important in changing that landscape, in changing the cultures, and providing our teachers with the knowledge and the support and the incentive to change what they're doing in the schools, in the classrooms.
And I think just to add to that, I mean, our picture is some of the provisions we just love. I mean, the Minnesota Reading Corps, and they're going to speak later. I mean, yes, they can help so well with some of the kids that are just below that AIM line. Such a fantastic program. So that's one way to help our schools so that they can qualify for some of the literacy aid. My idea is, sure, you give them the incentive, but let's also give the schools the support. The teachers are working so hard. So the Minnesota Reading Corps is one great source of support. And the other is to encourage the staff to pursue the professional development and passing this new test, which is more rigorous and requires more depth of knowledge, and rewarding them with a stipend is yet another incentive, another way to support. So combining the incentive with the support is really a smart approach in trying to address some of the existing staff needs.
Good afternoon. My name is Mary Bestie Sang. I live in St. Paul, and like the other wonderful women up here, I am the mother of a child who suffered with reading. To help with this reading issue as a young child, my daughter attended both public and private schools, and I was very sad that neither of these schools were able to help her with her reading. Luckily, my husband and I had the resources to, like some of these other women, hire private tutors. My daughter worked with a private tutor 2 to 3 hours a week for 5 or 6 years. And I'm happy to report that she now is in the full IB program in a local public school here and doing quite well. But boy, it came at a cost to her family. Like Susan and other mothers that I know, many of us gave up careers so that we could help our child because we knew they were bright and we knew that they would get more out of life. Very, very sad story. When my daughter was struggling with reading as a 6-year-old, she became depressed. I don't think I've ever suffered more than seeing my 6-year-old daughter come home from school and be depressed. Very, very sad. Since then, I have become certified as an Orton-Gillingham instructor, like Bette, and I work with struggling readers, and I assure you, the children I work with are bright kids, and they are being passed over in their schools. And I'm not up here to blame teachers. I think teachers are wonderful, but they are not being taught what they need to be taught to teach our children. I'll give you an example. 2 weeks ago, I did an assessment of a 7-year-old boy, bright kid. Dad's a lawyer, mom's a dentist. Again, these are some of the lucky kids that we're talking about today. Here's an example. I did an assessment of this boy, and it was very clear that he was going to keep falling further and further behind his peers. His mother tells me he has a wonderful teacher. I believe that. But when the mother shared this information with his teacher, she said, "You know what, Char? All you need to do is get some easier books and have him read those over the summer, and he will be fine." A well-meaning teacher, but totally ill-informed. And you all have to know that many children suffer. We up here have worked hard for our children, and now we're at the point where we're working hard for everyone because too many kids are missing out, and we pay a high price. Children who don't read become mental health issues to this state. They also affect how business operates in this state. Countless dollars are lost. I could go on those along those lines. But anyway, you can tell there's some passion here. Anyway, there are some other people who couldn't be here today that wanted to share a few things. I will summarize and try to make this as quick as possible.
If you would, because we're going to crunch, we're going to run out of time here, and we want to get everybody on the.
I am happy to do one more, and also to let you know that you all have copies of all these letters. I think most of you are aware that the third grade is critical for learning to read. So I will just focus on one thing. This is from Erica, I hope I get her name right, Frocky. And she is a special ed director and a technology specialist. She's worked with many, many children over the years, and she is now in private practice. And I just want to say this. I can't be present today, she tells us. However, if you are reading my words, you are hearing my voice. The next time you read for enjoyment, relaxation, or just to learn something, Try to think about what it's like to be able to read print, the print in front of you. Do you feel the sadness for the loss, the fear for the unknown? Ultimately, do you feel the failure of our children? Please, please take this issue very seriously, and I thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we have a representative of the Rochester Reading Center, who's one of the organizations that has been working on instruction in this area.
I need to set me up. Good afternoon. I'm Jan Hagedorn. I am a staff member of the Rochester Reading Center. We also have the official nonprofit title as the Dyslexia Association, Dyslexia Center of Minnesota. We're a nonprofit. We've been in Rochester for 60 years. Our founders literally were people that helped write the kinds of books that are being used for the scientifically based research that's being used in curriculums across the country now. I wanted to just talk to you today about the infusion training that we are doing in our district to train the teachers that are already in the system. And we've had great success, great rewards from the teachers. They're excited about it. And we wanted to show you some of the results. So the teachers themselves are telling us that they absolutely... They don't know what we're teaching them. And our goal is, as a center, is to reduce literacy for all. We do some private tutoring, but we realize we have to teach more teachers because we can't tutor every kid that needs help. There's just too many. And so by going into the schools, we've been able to impact many, many, many more students. So the generic term that I'm going to be using about our method is it's a systematic, multisensory, phonetically based techniques. Those are all based on scientific principles. It is not a program that you buy. It's a way that you teach it. And we wanted to demonstrate by going into the schools that all students can be impacted by this and that we can build some relationships with the teachers to make them more willing to learn it. So in 2007, Barbara Zielinski developed this program for us, and she took it into the schools. And I want to emphasize again, this is not something you sell. This is something you teach people how to do. It's a very intensive training program, and it's hands-on because that's how you actually affect change with teachers. Sitting and listening to a class does not actually implement the change in the classroom. And so with our training, we have 30 hours of instruction spread out over a period of several months in the structure of the structure of English language techniques and also in the scientifically multisensory phonetically based techniques that we use to work with struggling readers. And then we do some coaching on-site with the teachers. We visit their classroom 4 times, observe them teach a lesson, and give them some coaching. So far, we've trained 73 teachers. Now, if you look at it, that they have about 30 students each in their class, impact every year is 2,190 students that we're impacting with our Barb Zielinski going out and helping to teach teachers. And me now. I'm helping too. And so I wanted to show you some of the information that we've gleaned from this training. First of all, I want to point out that most of the people that have taken this training are elementary teachers and reading specialists. To date, not a single special ed teacher in Rochester has wanted to take the training, which we've started working with entire elementary schools when we did the training, but we found that with the staff moving around and attrition, that really didn't stand like we thought. You can't go in and train a building because next year it'll be different teachers in the building. It doesn't work quite as well as we'd sort of hoped that way. So I wanted to show you, though, we know that English is 87% or 78%. I've got a little issue with switching. Of English is predictable. We do a pre and post test of all of the people that we do training for, and we've been doing the training literally for 60 years, but it's just since 2007 that we've been going in and doing it in the schools. Our impression over those training sessions is that the teachers that are coming to us for training on their own and the ones that have come for this infusion training know no more about the structure of the English language or about some of the structure, the predictability of English than, say, a mom that would come in to take the training to help their child. It's just not something they know. So we have pre and post testing of our teachers. You can see that there is a number that didn't know any of the answers when we started on the multiple spelling questions. For structure of the language and how to break apart syllables and multisyllabic words, again, you can see it wasn't something that the teachers were very strong in when they started with us. It's pretty tough to teach it to a kid if you don't know it yourself. And I think one of the issues that you're going to find when you're working with trying to get teachers to take this kind of training is they don't even know they don't know it. So it's very hard for them to be motivated to seek it because it's not something that's in it was certainly nothing that was ever mentioned in their college. And it's certainly not something that they talk about with each other. But they're talking about it after they've had our infusion with us because they're stunned at what they don't know. Now, we decided we wanted to see how effective it was. And so we took an infusion school and we matched it with a control school in our same district. So same curriculum. You can see that it's a pretty nice close match. Okay? And it actually turned out that our infusion group actually had more children of color, but both schools had children that were a lot of high-risk kids that were at risk. Now, in our 2006-2007 year, we taught just a kindergarten teacher in that school. And I don't know if you can notice the colors, but these are the two schools that, if they were ranked at the beginning of the year with the kindergarten scores, both of those schools had kids that were coming in that were in the lower performing groups. Our control school made it to here, and the infusion school made it a little higher. And it just re-ranked. The second year, the other kindergarten teacher also took the training, and all of a sudden, our school went up to the second, to the highest. And this is by Christmas time. And the next year, after we'd had all of the teachers in that school trained, and they were getting really excited about it. I mean, this suddenly was becoming a topic at lunch where they were talking about how did you teach that? What did you do about it? And our school, which is still bringing in the kids that are at high risk when they start at kindergarten, they were actually the best school in the district by the end of... That's what we thought, too. But wait, it gets better. Now, I'm going to be showing you a box and whisker plot, and I just put this in just to sort of give you an idea. This is the basic shape. Flip it up so that it gives you an idea of where the mean and the frequency scores are. I wanted to show you a comparison of our control school and their national Stanford scores that's nationally normed, standardized. This is this year's data that they take in the fall. And you can see we defined by color. We thought the kids at risk were in the lower 30th percentile. They're red. Moderate risk is 30 to 40%. They're yellow. And we figured green would be not. There's still kids that might be at risk, but they're doing okay generally. And what this shows to us, and this blue line is the national mean. So that's the 50th percentile. In the control group, you can see that there's more than, particularly look at the fourth and fifth grade. More than half of the kids are below the national norm, and a lot of them are at risk, and those numbers really aren't changing very much. Now, in the control group, the infusion school, you can see the kids still are coming, they're coming in a little bit at less risk by the time they start second grade because they've had the kindergarten and first grade teachers that have already started working on the work. But look at the difference in the yellow. And that the range and the frequency of those scores are shrinking. So we're actually compressing the group to make them more similar. There's less spread. By the time those kids in fifth grade hit fifth grade, about 70% of them are above the national average. So it doesn't mean that we've fixed every kid, but we've taken the whole population and put them up. Now, if you were only going to be looking at the kids that are at risk, you can see, again, that the intervention in the early years makes quite a difference in how many kids that are at risk, and over time, it still goes down. We believe probably a big part of our infusion groups not taking care of some of those kids is we had all the special ed kids that never had our teachers that have never had our training. And you know, our interest would be if we could train them to see if we could get those numbers down too. So here's what the teachers are saying. They need and they want this training. They can't imagine being a reading specialist and not having this training. They think it really helps them. And we know we're not done, and we know we're small, but this could be bigger, but right now it's not. So thank you for giving me the chance to tell us.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hagedorn. The next piece of it, and I think she's been focusing on both the incentives for teachers to come back and demonstrate that they and get a stipend for achieving the ability to teach. But now the reading core and Kathy Saltzman joins us. I think we were partners in crime in much of this endeavor, and she is now working with Reading Corps. And I'm happy to welcome her to the conference committee and to present some of the results of what happens with the Reading Corps program.
Well, it is a pleasure, Madam Chair, to be with the conference committee, and I'm Kathy Saltzman, the executive director of Serve Minnesota's Math and Reading Corps. And so I just want to tell you what a pleasure it is and honor it is to be here today and to talk about something that is so important to our state and to the children of Minnesota. It's a very important topic when you think about the fact that 15,000 of our third graders are going to fail the third grade reading test. And as you've heard previously, that impacts not only them as individual children and their chance of success in school and life, but also the ability of our state to be successful. So today we want to provide you with an overview of the Minnesota Reading Corps and how it is doing extremely critical work in making sure that children read by third grade, which is one of the earliest indicators of a child's success in life. Today, as we sit here, imagine, and this is going on, there are over 600 AmeriCorps reading tutors working today in our state at over 400 settings, which include preschool centers, early childhood, Head Start, and K-3 schools. And they are impacting over 18,000 students in our state in grade 3. every day in grades K through 3, they are working with students for 20 minutes a day, one-on-one, and they're getting amazing results, which you'll hear about. It really, as we heard the first part of, you know, today's testimony, it's kind of a little depressing when you think about the fact of what kind of hope do children have. And so I hope that in the next few minutes as we talk, you're going to hear about hope and how an investment in the Reading Corps is truly making a difference. And so we'd like to start out with showing a quick video that really will give you a sense of what the Minnesota Reading Corps is. It was filmed in a Bloomington elementary school. And one thing I do want to note before we get started is that today there was an announcement by the Target Corporation, and they're going to be helping to fund at least 2 reading tutors in every Minneapolis school. I think that says a lot that, you know, Target has really committed itself to third grade reading, so we are very delighted to be a partner with them in that. So with that, I'm going to move the microphone.
Reader wasn't really interested in reading.
We knew she didn't have an interest in reading. She just would always push us away when we tried to get her to read. The very first day of school, he came up to my desk and he said, "Mrs. Nevin, my name is Garrett, and I just want you to know I'm pretty good at math, but I'm no good at reading." And that was just kind of heartbreaking for me.
It's so hard to see him struggle and not improve.
This word is?
Put.
Excellent. Start at Jack.
Put on his mittens.
Wonderful job fixing that word here. I work with students one-on-one. I take them for 20 minutes every day, opened, front, and we do specific reading interventions. There's different skills that each intervention builds on, and fluency is our main focus. But each student, depending on how they're reading, they can benefit more greatly from a specific intervention.
The barber had moved to the second grade. And
Brooke didn't know any of her letter sounds yet, and she hadn't learned how to word blend. And so when she would try to read a word, she was just basing it on her sight.
Show me in your fingers who needs 1 minute, 2 minutes, or 0 minutes.
In class, Garrett really didn't want to raise his hand. He was nervous about answering any questions. He really didn't want to fail.
I was thinking about the student.
I am the internal coach for Reading Corps here at Ridgeview.
You were kind of concerned about, then I say let's continue with this intervention.
The importance of my position is to make sure that literacy piece is really happening as it should be happening and to make those decisions about when they need to change interventions or how to read the data and understand them better.
Every time she met with Ms. Kalachi, she kept doing better and better. And, you know, we couldn't do that at home.
So I worked on letter sounds with her and putting them together. And once she learned that skill, it was amazing. And she just started to read, and her face lit up, and she just her big smile. And it was really exciting.
When Brooke started taking off, you could just see her confidence grew, her desire to want to read increased. She just became all around more interested in academics in general.
After the day's work,
her teacher calls her a star, and so that makes us feel good. That makes her feel great. She loves school, and so that's a big change, that she loves coming to school, because I think reading has opened her eyes to how much she can learn.
Oh, how far did you get? Is it getting good? We had Garrett in a couple different things. We had him in summer school, and we had him in another after-school program here at the school. But all of those were with other kids. And I really think the one-on-one really made the difference with Garrett.
And I think further, the data-driven approach, you actually see the progress. You know, it's not fuzzy in any way, shape, or form. You actually see the progress both on the child and on paper. And that's been very important to us. When he started working with Tia, it was definitely a transformation.
Garrett, why don't you try?
And I just saw him bloom from that first day like you would not believe. His confidence, his demeanor, the way he held his whole body. It was a different kid. It was
It was incredible, like caterpillar to butterfly.
And every time I see Garrett in the hallway, he'll say, Miss Galachi, I just read this new book, and I just finished it. And he'll just be so excited and proud of himself. Now he finally feels pride in his reading, and he likes to share that with everybody.
Having him say, I'm finished with that book now, and I'm looking for another book. It's quiet in the house. Why is it quiet in the house? Garrett's reading. Holy cow, Garrett's reading.
All righty, how about our second graders? There we go.
Ridgeview is a typical school, kindergarten through fifth grade. And what AmeriCorps does for us is it provides us essentially a full service model to meet the needs of all kids. And there's that extra support, that extra boost for our kids that really aren't at grade level and are working hard to be at grade level.
How are you doing today?
Good.
Good. And what was your favorite part of the day so far?
It offers something that a teacher cannot do on their own. We wish we could, but we can't. And so having someone who is trained and who creates a relationship with kids and gives them a safe place to grow and become better readers is so invaluable. And it benefits everybody. You know, their families, the kids, teachers, the whole school. So I think it's incredible. I really do. We feel privileged that our school has this program that other schools might not have. To be able to read is such a valuable part of education. And at an early point in her elementary school years, she got the help she needed.
Did you have a good day?
Mm-hmm. We feel very grateful for the Reading Corps and for Ms. Colacci.
Being a literacy tutor impacts the lives of so many children. And you see it firsthand when you're working with them, the impact that you have on them.
Will you be back in time for lunch?
Mom, you got every single word. High five, Lanise. Woohoo! All right, I'd like to hear you read this next little paragraph. Can you read from I'm?
I'm not sure.
When I went to Rochester, and Senator Nelson and I visited a couple schools back in February. One of the things that we heard from one of the staff was that when AmeriCorps first started and AmeriCorps members went into their schools, they were kind of thinking, well, what do I do with them? They're here, they're ready to serve. And she said, the difference we see now, because now when a Minnesota Reading Corps tutor walks in the door, they are trained. They have support. We have helped to train the school staff. We provide overall master coaching to ensure fidelity, to ensure that the best practices that are being implemented with this program are kept to a very high standard. And I believe that is why the Minnesota Reading Corps is getting such incredible results. I'd like to start now to just kind of share with you a frontline story of what happens in a school. And Representative Graffalo, we have with us today Ben Januska, who is from Farmington Elementary.
Yeah, Farmington. Woo.
And, you know, I want to make sure you wake up there.
Control yourself now.
We have served on conference committees together before, so I appreciate seeing you at the head of the table. So perhaps if he could share what it's like in Farmington. He has some very powerful statements to make.
I would be happy to. My name is Ben Januska, and I'm the proud principal of Farmington Elementary. Go Tigers. And I'm also a huge, huge fan of the Reading Corps. And let me tell you why. Last year, Farmington Elementary School was awarded one Reading Corps member. And I have to tell you that it's been quite some time since I've experienced an educational program that has made such an immediate, significant, and positive impact in helping our low-performing primary students to read. Many of these students needed extra help, but due to some restrictions, for instance, in special ed or budget-wise, we just weren't able to get them the extra help that we felt that they needed. My staff and I spent a long, long time with many meetings trying to figure out what the best solution would be. Reading Corps proved to be that solution and so much more. Our Reading Corps literacy tutor came to us thoroughly trained on research-based best practice reading instruction strategies, and I think that made all the difference. She is continually being coached and supported by Reading Corps master teacher or master coaches, and her lessons are prescriptive, detailed, and intense. They also work. Our students' reading fluency improved immediately. By mid-year, my first and second grade teachers were asking our Reading Corps member and our staff who served as our Reading Corps internal coach to share some of their reading strategies and techniques. It became a very collaborative process, and Reading Corps fit right into the continuum of what we were trying to do for these students. It's an understatement to say we were thrilled with Reading Corps and that they were able, when they were able to provide us with two members this year. From my perspective, one of the most important and impressive things about the Reading Corps model is its cost effectiveness. The monetary compensation for an AmeriCorps Reading Corps member is modest at best, yet its members, I believe, get something far more valuable than money. They get training, they get confidence, and they have an opportunity to advance in their education. And education is priceless. One of our Reading Corps members told a colleague of mine that because of her Reading Corps experience, she was going to pursue a degree in education. Another member who was a recent college graduate with a degree in education told me that after college, she felt that she just really wasn't ready to teach. But after the training and the experience she received from the Reading Corps team, she felt confident and ready for her own classroom. Rigorous applicant screening, research-based training, best practice teaching from a non-political, child-centered organization, and the opportunity for its members to pursue their education is what makes Reading Corps a successful program. Hearing a student read fluently and seeing the look of accomplishment on their face is what makes Reading Corps loved by parents, teachers, and principals. To quote my Title I reading specialist, who, by the way, also serves as our Reading Corps internal coach, and I promised her I'd whisper it when I said that she's been teaching for over 33 years, which made me promise. But she said, I've been teaching reading for over 33 years, and the Reading Corps program is the best thing I've ever seen. I've never been this excited for our students. And it is true. Reading Corps has made a significant difference in our school with our students and with our staff. So just can't say enough about it. Thank you.
Very good, Madam Chair.
Yes.
I'd like to now have Lorraine Parsons speak with you. She is with our training and research for our Reading Corps here in Minnesota. And I think, again, I want to focus on results. You should have some handouts in front of you, and we are a data-driven organization, and you have a lot of data in front of you. But I think it is data that is full of hope because it really addresses the impact that the Reading Corps is having. When you think about the fact that children who initially are referred to be served, they are all on track to fail. And when you consider that all Reading Corps participants who are at risk, that 7 out of 10 of the graduates pass the grade 3 MCA2, and they are, in raw numbers last year, over 2,100 kids passed the 2010 test. And again, these are children who are at risk of failing. So, Lorraine, if you would like to speak to the data.
Yes, thank you. My name is Lorraine Parson. I work with training and development with Minnesota Reading Corps, and I also provide a service that we call master coaching, which is direct support to any schools that are using Minnesota Reading Corps tutors in their schools. And on the side of research and development, if you are looking at the packet that you have in front of you, you have a bar chart just inside the front cover of your sheet. And this is an important example. We are a program that services students age 3 to grade 3. And this is a quasi-experimental design that was conducted by Dave Heisted in Minneapolis Public Schools, showing that the total literacy for Reading Corps students exceeded students who did not receive Reading Corps. And our results are also being shown at our kids at the higher grade as well, but we are in age three to grade three, and it's important to know our full continuum. In the lower half of that same sheet, you'll see a graph that may look like a lot of dots to be seeing at one time. But what it's showing you is in five different skill areas that are considered the early literacy skills for kiddos that are in ages 3 to 5, you'll see that from fall to winter to spring, which is each one of those columns for one single assessment, that students are making incredible progress from fall to winter to spring as a result of reading course support in preschool classrooms. On the second page are the results we have for our kindergarten through third grade students. And if you're looking at this table, horizontally, the first series of numbers are showing you the reading core mean growth rate. And right below that horizontally is the targeted growth rate. And these growth rates are items per week. So when you're talking kindergarten students, a kindergartner who is on track to pass the MCAs in third grade has to grow at a rate of 1.15 letter sounds per week. The average reading core kid grows at a rate of 1.95 letter sounds per week. But when they start, they are below target for where they should be to make that progress. You'll see all the way across, if you skip to second and third grade, because that's the next series of graphs, we're actually going to show you some student examples here. But you'll see that the mean student growth rate in second grade is 1.61 words per week, and the targeted growth rate is 1.31. So again, our students are exceeding the targeted growth rate. And in third grade, mean growth rate of 1.37 for our students, targeted growth rate of 1.08 words per minute. I think Kathy spoke about the table below here a little bit with regards to our students demonstrating proficiency in the MCAs. Of course, that's a very big one for our students and our schools. And in raw numbers, 2,124 Minnesota Reading Corps students passed in 2010 who would not have probably passed without Reading Corps. The next page you have shows an overview of our model in an illustrative fashion. We are a data-driven, research-based program. We take data on all the students that are receiving Reading Corps weekly. We review that data monthly to determine if we need to change which strategy we're using with the children, or if the students have reached target for their grade level and no longer need Reading Corps services. Should I talk about the So I'll talk a little bit about our training as that relates to the graph that you have in the background here. Our tutors receive 3 days of training in August before school starts and two additional half-day sessions during the school year. We also train internal coaches. That's a title we have for a teacher who's actually at the school where the tutor is going to be serving. And they also receive 3 days of training so that all of the participants are learning assessment and the different 10 strategies that we teach our tutors. The tutors are AmeriCorps workers, and they service the students every day at the school where they work. They work with every child one-on-one in 20-minute sessions. We train our tutors and our internal coaches in 1-minute reading fluency assessments, and like I said, 10 specific forms of reading skill practice. We, as internal and master coaches, collaboratively conduct observations every month for every tutor to make sure that they're delivering all the steps of the intervention selected by the internal coach. We also conduct assessment reliability checks to make sure that the data has validity. We want to make sure everybody is scoring the exact same way. Each one of our interventions has a specific series of steps. Common strategies across them all include immediate corrective feedback for students, modeling by the adult, and high rates of specific praise to students. Depending on which of the 10 that are used, internal coaches determine which they think is appropriate for their child. Progress monitoring occurs every week, and progress monitoring is the term that we use for collecting data from every child served. Every child is administered a 1-minute reading assessment or letter sound assessment or blending words assessment. And that data is plotted on a progress graph for every child. On a monthly basis, we review every child's graph and determine if we need to make changes. On the graph behind me, you'll see one of our second grade students who started out below target in the fall for where a second grade student would need to be in order to have strong proficiency on the MCAs in the spring of third grade. And you'll see that we have vertical lines appearing on the graph. And that what that tells us is that's when a particular intervention was being used. So all the data to the right of the first vertical line that you see labeled DR means that a specific strategy we call duet reading was used every session with that child for several weeks. At one point, there was a change made to another intervention, the repeated reading with comprehension strategy, or RRCS, and you see the vertical line there showing the change. And again, data was collected every week. The child then was able to score at the spring target for second graders, which is 90 words a minute, and then was progress monitored. So after the right of that exit line, you'll see three data points when the student was no longer receiving service, and we were just checking to see that he was maintaining his skills. Another student graph that's also important for us to look at is the students who start out even lower and have to work very hard to make progress. This is one of the second graders that is actually in one of our St. Paul schools. He is a delightful child, let me just tell you. He's wonderfully fun to watch, but he does have to work hard. And through reading course support with a lot of encouragement and very consistent work, he made outstanding progress. He did not achieve spring target, we see that, but he made staggering gains from the fall. This was his progress in second grade, and I'd like you to see his progress in third grade. This is the same child now, having received reading course services in second grade and also in third grade. So he was exited very recently, and they progress monitored him three times, and they're very nervous because he didn't maintain exactly on his aim line, so they'll be re-enrolling him. But his progress in third grade was absolutely staggering and could not have happened without the progress in second grade as well.
So, Madam Chair, I just, again, want to thank you for the ability, for us to be here today. If you have any questions, we certainly can take them. But I think what's been very important to note here is that this would not be happening if we did not have Minnesotans who are stepping forward to give a year of service. And they're not just young people who are coming out of college. We have retirees. We have teachers who have said, I'm not ready to teach anymore. I don't want a classroom, but I want to be with kids. We have people who are mid-career changers. We have parents who have been in schools. They receive about a $500 every 2 week stipend and then a $5,500 award at the end, which they can use in college. We have people who have used that to go back to school to get a teaching degree. So it really is a very important program because it leverages the power of national service along with these investments by the state of Minnesota and by the federal government and also our private foundation, our partners. We do a lot of work in order to raise private funds. I do want to point out a graph that you have. And on one side, it shows the growth potential if there is an increased appropriation for the Reading Corps. Right now, we have 675 members. Next year, we are working to grow to 835. With the additional appropriation, we would be able to go to 1,200 members, who would be serving 33,000 students in the state of Minnesota. If you turn that over, what happens if we don't receive additional funding? We have been able to grow, but that growth isn't going to continue without additional investments. And so for next year, we do plan to grow to 835 members serving over 21,000 students. But without additional appropriations, we will have to drop the size of the Corps to about 555 to go back to our 2009 our numbers and dropping back to about 14,000 students. So I would just share with you that I've always felt that it's important to invest in things that you get results from, and I think with the Reading Corps, I hope that we've shared with you today the return on this critical state investment. I think it's an incredible return on on investment, and I just want to thank you again for being able to be here and want to commend you for also continuing to lead the charge, Senator Olson. It was wonderful and fun to work with you.
Thank you, as well with you. I know that you're heavily invested and will be continued in Minneapolis and St. Paul, but how many other districts are you in now?
Yes. We have here on the graph, I believe it says the number of school districts. Right now, we are in 109 out of the 300-plus school districts. We are at about 432 sites. Next year, we will be growing to 133. So we are all over the state of Minnesota. I think we have a reading corps member in almost every legislative district. And one of the challenges is that when we get into greater Minnesota, some of the schools are smaller. We want to have a critical mass of students. We work very hard to make sure that they have the same kind of internal coaching and master coaching to ensure fidelity. So there are some greater challenges in being in greater Minnesota, but we fully expect that we need to make sure that any school district who comes to us, and we haven't done a lot of marketing because we know we don't have the members to meet the needs. So a lot of it is word of mouth, but we have tried every year to expand the number of sites and school districts served.
And each dollar of state investment is matched by how many dollars federal and also some of your fundraising endeavors?
It's about a 3-to-1 match, but I would like if Audrey Zucker, who is the CEO of Serve Minnesota, she can give you more specifics in that area.
And then we're getting close to running out of time, so I appreciate if we could wrap up here, and I have some few closing comments, too. Welcome, Ms. Zucker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am Audrey Zucker, and I serve as CEO of Serve Minnesota, and the Minnesota Reading Corps has been a strategic initiative of ours since 2003, so I want to thank this legislative body for your support over the years. And to answer your question, a state dollar or a local dollar leverages $3.5 of federal funds, which is the reason that this program is cost effective.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much for your presentation and for the handout so that we can make reference. And Susan, you have one last little pitch here.
We're done.
Thank you very much.
Education as we know it is in deep trouble, and the results can be seen all around us. For example, in 2011, we'll spend $310 billion putting people in jail and keeping them there. And the thing is, over 70% of them are functionally illiterate. And at the heart of the matter lies one insidious factor. Up to 40% of our children are reaching the third grade unable to read. And just what are the schools telling these children's parents?
I asked this kindergarten teacher, and she said, oh, no, it's fine. Some kids just, it's slow. It'll come.
Yeah, the teachers really didn't know what to do. I kept hearing the message that, you know, he's just immature. He just needs time to grow, and he'll get it.
And to be told repeatedly, she'll catch up. She will figure this out. This is normal at this stage. We heard that a lot.
I remember just noticing that incredible anxiety and frustration that she felt around not being able to read and not understanding it.
Kids figure out at a very young age who's reading and who's not reading and who's able to do it and who's not and who's struggling and who it comes easily to. And they start to internalize right off the bat kind of that something's wrong with them, that there's something going on that they don't understand and that makes them feel stupid or dumb.
Of the 100% of kids who don't read where they should be, only 10% of them are wired neurologically for difficulty in reading. The other 90% are what we term instructional casualties. They've just never been taught properly.
Minnesota's success in advancing the cause of improving instruction in reading so that all children can learn to read is a powerful demonstration of what can happen when people of diverse perspectives and talents and positions come together toward a common cause.
This whole situation with not teaching kids how to read, it's really a national tragedy. And unfortunately, teachers are blamed, and it's not the teachers. We have teachers who are so well-intentioned, but if they're trained incorrectly in schools of education, then they don't know what they don't know. It's when they come to take training later and learn what they don't know that the revelation occurs to them, and they get very angry because they weren't taught properly in the first place.
When you were in college, you heard a conversation about phonics. And when you were in college, you learned a conversation, you learned about whole language. And what we learned, what we were taught is that it was either one or the other. It was either whole language or phonics. But of course, it's the answer lies in the middle. It's that gray area. And that's what the National Reading Panel set out for us. That's what Minnesota's version of Reading First through the University of Minnesota rolled out for us. That the answer is both and. It's whole language and it's phonics. And instead of looking at it through those two lenses, or one of those two lenses, look at it through both, but also through the five components of literacy. Phonemic awareness, phonics, fluency, vocabulary, and comprehension.
What was most compelling to us in terms of the testimony, we needed something to really push us over the top in terms of gaining support from our colleagues. And it was when the teachers came in and gave such a compelling testimony about the fact that they didn't know what they didn't know. They didn't realize that they didn't have the skills needed to really help struggling readers. And that testimony where teachers came in and said, after I took this training, after I took this course, and I came back and I saw I am making a difference now. These children are reading.
Through all of this, it's just amazing to think back to what I used to do. And honestly, when I think back to what I used to do for kids, I am ashamed. I really am ashamed. Not so much how I treated kids. I'll never change that. The way I treated kids was outstanding and awesome. A lot of love there, a lot of passion. But when it came to teaching kids, at that point in my career, I just didn't know what I know now. And it's, I wish I can go back. I wish I can go back and reteach those kids. And I hope, hopefully somewhere along the way after me, someone had the knowledge to get these kids to read.
Thank you, Susan, and thank you to all of you who have presented, and to give you kind of a perspective of where this has come from and kind of the lay the groundwork for what the Senate has proposed in their bill this year. One of the things that's easy for us to do is to set goals or just say, you know, or give you throw out some money and say, go do it. But I think you can see that there needed to be, you needed to get to the bottom of things and saying, why is this not happening? And start to try to drive some real change in an intentional way. And one of the things that's important in literacy, there was Dr. Reed Lyon came to town, and he was one of the ones that had developed the Reading First that was a part of the No Child Left Behind. And there was a lot of hullabaloo about that and a lot of controversy. And he said Minnesota was one of the better states in terms of its implementation, but it was drowned out. Because there was not the intentionality and the leadership and the buy-in that needed to be happening in order to make it work. And so he's been very excited and very supportive of what's been happening here in Minnesota, that we need an intentionality, and we cannot let up to assure that we're having teachers who are well prepared to be able to deliver if we are going to ever achieve this reading by third grade proficiently. And we are hearing that all the time now. But I think that's why the proposals that we have in our bill are meant to have some of that intentionality, if you will, of continuing the march down this path. And we have $4.5 million in here for the reading instruction stipend that will reward teachers that are able to gear up, and in some cases the school districts may be providing staff development along these lines, and I think we need to be looking for more ways for delivering on that. We have $4.1 million which is an increase for the Minnesota Reading Corps that will bring that to 1,200 Reading Corps members that will be operating in Minnesota, and they're trained along these very same lines that we can intentionally get the young people and children over the hurdle. And then the last one, we believe the $85 million for the literacy incentive aid, which is available to all school districts, and they went over it, and you have the spreadsheets that kind of lay it out as far as a comparison. Every district is eligible, but I was interested. You may have seen the budget that the Star and Tribune came out, and you maybe cringed when they said we should be cutting K-12 education by $350 million. I gulped, and I thought, how are they planning to do that? Well, they never really tell us. But there's one of the things that was in here that is very important and reinforces, I think, what we're trying to do. It said all of government, K-12 education included, ought to hear a clarion call to redesign their operations for greater efficiency and better outcomes. That's one thing. But the legislature would do well to push cuts into the second year, which is what we did in the aid that we are using for this, of the biennium, to create de facto deadlines for change. It should begin a move toward outcome-based payments. And that's what this is the balancing the proficiency and the growth. So it isn't just rewarding those that are already geared up for greater effectiveness. It's also rewarding the growth for it, and it's available to all, and it can increase as this increases. So we're looking for an incentive because we want all kids to read with proficiency by third grade. So that is my pitch to you for the Senate position on literacy. So thank you very much, I think you are the next on the docket. But I don't know if any of you have any questions, or if we just oversaturated you with a lot of background. But I think it's important for us to understand and appreciate, number one, the power of moms and parents getting involved, and the intent to dig deep and find out what's really going on here and how can we make a difference. And I think that's what we haven't got time to waste, and we need to keep this. We need to keep moving, because these kids only have 1 year in first grade or 1 year in second grade. Now, some may think we need to retain, but we would like to see them get that proficiency by third grade so they aren't having to go into special education. Think of the money that will be saved and the number of problems that we're trying to deal with all along the way that have at their root the lack of the foundation in reading. And you'll see that we could have resources that we could spend in a much more desirable way than what we're having to do now, if we can lick this one. So that's my pitch. Representative Garofalo.
Well, Madam Chair, thank you for the excellent presentation. And we got floor session at 3:00, so I think the House members are going to be running up there. But I want to thank you for. I know I'm a newcomer to this game. You've been fighting for this charge for a long time, and I've always known how important literacy is to you, and to see your enthusiasm.
It's not to me. This is not for me. So don't ever get the idea that this is something she really wants. I hope you got the message that it's for the kids. And if we can't deliver on this, if we can't deliver, our whole system is going to suffer.
You're right, Madam Chair. It's not that big of a deal to you. So I want to thank you for the excellent presentation, the great testifiers.
So are you, and you'll be calling the next meeting.
That is correct.
And we haven't made that decision yet, but We will wait to hear and keep you posted.
All right, fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you all for coming and for your attention. Yeah. Oh, meeting is adjourned. Thank you.